This show is not a substitute for professional counseling. The views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Further, any opinions heard on the show are not meant to replace professional healthcare and mental health treatment. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you are in need of professional help and are a UA student, you are encouraged to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Good evening. It's straight up 6 o'clock in time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting live from the WVUA FM studio, 90.7 The Capstone, on the campus of the University of Alabama. My name is Dr. B.J. Gunther, and I'm the host of the show. I say this every week, but I'm going to keep saying it in case you don't know. This show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students, and in particular, UA students. You can listen to us live each Tuesday night on 90.7 at 6 o'clock or online at www.wvuafm.ua.edu. And tonight we'll be taking questions via email, so if you have them, please email questions to brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. Again, I want to remind you this is not a call-in show, so I ask that you don't call into the station with questions. But as I said just a minute ago, you can email us at the address I just gave you, and I'll try to be giving that or doing a better job giving that email out during the show. I realize that I've failed to do that in the past few shows. Also, if you have any ideas, email us, and it's brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. And we'll consider using your idea for another show topic. It'll probably be in the fall, because we've got about 3 or 4 more shows for this semester, and then we won't start up again until the fall. So I'll be taking show ideas if you have them. We had a great show last week, and we talked about rejection and resiliency. Tonight, I think we have just as great of a show and a topic that's definitely pertinent. Tonight I asked the question, is hooking up replacing romantic relationships on college campuses? We have two guests tonight. The first guest will be speaking with us live on the telephone from St. Paul, Minnesota, Dr. John Burree. I hope I pronounced that right. He's a professor of psychology from St. Thomas University in St. Paul, Minnesota. Dr. Burree is an educator, speaker, author, and researcher. He's a professor in the psychology department, where he teaches a very popular course on psychology of marriage and the family, which coincidentally is I got my concentration in marriage and family, so I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about. During the 30 years that Dr. Burree has taught at St. Thomas, he's won numerous local and national awards for his teaching. He's written several books and just countless articles. We've got a lot to talk about in the next 30 minutes. So thank you for being on the show, Dr. Burree.
Thank you.
Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, that's great.
Tell us a little bit about your history and your background. I know you've been doing this for a long time, but how did you get interested in marriage and family?
This is going to sound a little odd, but I came across my first empirical research article ever when I was in eighth grade.
I didn't even know how to say empirical.
I know.
The title
of the article was, "Does Absence Make the Heart Grow Fonder?" And I read this thing, and I thought, people actually research this. This is absolutely fascinating. And then I never took a psych course in high school, but I knew I wanted to be a psychology major. So I took my first psych course when I was a freshman in college, and I was in love. But I was in love with it way back in eighth grade.
Yeah.
So from there, I went directly into graduate school, and that was kind of it.
And how did you get into the specialty of marriage and family? Was it in your program that you were in, or just the continued interest?
It was more my early research interests into parental authority and parental nurturance in the family and the difference that those make in the adolescent development. And from there, I went from the research into teaching the course, and then I did more research into relationships and so it just kind of evolved over the years. And as you said, I've been at it for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Tell us, you heard the intro. I hope you heard the intro. where I announce what the title of the show is, what we're going to be talking about tonight is Hooking Up, Replacing Romantic Relationships on College Campuses. About how big is St. Thomas University?
We have about 8,000 undergraduates and about 6,000 graduate students.
What's your opinion on my question?
It's not an easy thing to answer, so I'll probably have to give a long-winded response. Is that
sure.
okay?
Sure, that's
okay.
fine.
So basically, it looks like there are three sexual schemas. Schemas are like they're ways in which we interpret reality. We use them automatically. We use them all the time. So sexual schemas would basically tell us the who, the what, the when, the why of sexual behavior.
Okay.
So there are basically among young adults in the United States three broad sexual schemas. You have your sexually traditional individuals who believe that you abstain from sexual intercourse until marriage.
Okay.
That abstaining is a way that you show respect and love. And then there's permissiveness with affection. The idea here is that sex is an appropriate expression of love for one another. So mutual love would be the prerequisite for sex.
Okay.
And then the third schema is permissiveness without affection. What some have referred to as casual sex, recreational sex, or hooking up. So if we look at, say, the mid-1970s to today, this is what it looks like. In the mid-70s, there were about 10 to 15% of young adults in the United States that were sexually traditional. It looks like it's a little higher now. Matter of fact, in a 2011 study, they found that about 25% of young adults 15 to 25 years old had never had sex, and they were abstaining. So
I'm shocked. I'm speechless because
I know.
That surprises me.
I know. So then we look at permissiveness with affection. In the mid-80s, it was about 75% of both men and women. Now it looks like it's about 25% of men and about 40% of women, which then takes us to permissiveness without affection, which was about 10 to 15% in the mid-80s. And now it looks like it's closer to 50% for men and about 30% for women. So there appears to be kind of, yes, it does look like there's more hooking up going on. And at the other side, it looks like there may be a little movement towards no sex. So, but this is just recent. So we'll have to see over the next 10 years how this pans out.
Has there been an increase in, I don't know how to ask this, but has there been, you said 30% of women are now participating, I guess, in casual sex.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been an increase in women participating in casual sex? Because I would have thought it would have been more than 30%, higher.
I'm actually a little surprised by that as well. So these are the most recent statistics that I've been able to come up with. So, for example, here at St. Thomas, when I did a study 2 years ago on hooking up behavior, it was, and these were general psychology students, it was closer to 55% of the women said that they had hooked up at least once, whereas for the men it was about 65 to 70%.
Huh. Did you, I'm taking a sidebar here, did you just, how did you give people the surveys? I'm assuming people volunteered anonymously.
Yes. Yes. Everything is extremely anonymous,
uh-huh.
Very confidential. And I mean, I'm assuming that they were being honest.
What about, you know, that kind of, this based on the research that you're talking about, the most recent research, then that kind of answers my question, is hooking up replacing romantic relationships on college campuses? I guess the answer would be, based on these statistics, not necessarily.
Right. It looks like there's two extremes happening.
Uh-huh.
On the one hand, yes, and on the other hand, there may be more sexually traditional individuals emerging, which is very interesting.
Well, and don't you think, is there a pattern of it waning? In other words, you know, there being like a roller coaster, like maybe in the 90s it was the former, and now it's swinging back. You see what I mean? Where it goes back and forth.
It's probably too early to tell how this is actually going to pan out.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to keep my finger on the pulse of the research. I haven't seen anything more recent than that 2011 study that I cited.
That's pretty recent. In your opinion, why do you think dating and romantic relationships are so important for us to examine?
Love, I mean, I'm a giant fan of love. Love has an incredible potential to bring life. I use this analogy that I love the ocean. I love swimming in it. I love walking along it. I just love watching it. And the waves, one day I realized, this is maybe 25 years ago, I was watching and I realized that the waves of the ocean never, ever stop. And I thought, that's the way life is. The waves of life never stop. And I've had people say to me, you know, when all the crap in my life stops, then I'll be happy. And all I can tell them for sure is, you know, you're probably never going to be happy.
That's a good answer. I mean, it's a harsh answer, but some people need to hear that. It kind of wakes them up.
Well, it's reality.
That's right.
And as you're facing the waves of life, love has this incredible potential to do it together. You know, mm-hmm. I've got your back. We're mm-hmm. in this together. We're a team. We're going to handle whatever life throws at us. And that is so incredibly life-giving.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, when we do love poorly, it can be so devastating. It can be so draining. There are so many people that basically have scar tissue on the heart as a result of poor dating experiences.
Oh, yes, and I see that so much at the counseling center.
Sure,
and it's just so, you know, we're considered a brief counseling center at UA, and that means 15 sessions. Students are usually given 15 sessions or less, and it's just, you know, it's heartbreaking to see somebody come in who has had their heart broken and they're still in love with that person.
Mm-hmm.
And some of their friends have not experienced, as a matter of fact, I had someone today tell me that one of her close friends had never experienced being in love, so she couldn't really relate to how this person was going through the pain of a breakup, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, we are giving ourselves emotionally and intellectually and physically too often without any sort of commitment. And when we do that, the potential for pain, the potential for hurt is pretty great.
It's true. It's a gamble. It's a risk.
Yes.
If you put your heart out there. Hey, we're going to take a break for just a few minutes, and then we're going to come back. And I want to ask you something about sexual activity on college campuses. So I'll leave you with that teaser, and we'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
My hidden treasure chest, golden grand piano, my beauty focus, EOU. Ooh, ooh, I'd leave it all. My acres of a land I've achieved. It may be hard for you to stop and believe, but for you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all. Ooh, for you, ooh, you, ooh, I'd leave it all. Give me one good reason why I should never make a change.
Tuscaloosa weather is brought to you by WVUA-TV. You can catch the latest forecasts on WVUA News now in high definition on weekdays at 4, 5, 6, and 10 o'clock, and every weekend at 10 p.m.
Lows tonight fall back at the low 60s, a cloudy sky, occasional rain expected for Wednesday, a soaker at times, but it doesn't rain all day. Have the umbrella handy for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Rain chance between 90 and 100%, so pretty much guaranteed you're going to have some rain at times all the way through Friday. Overnight lows continue in the 60s each night. For the weekend, finally catching a break in the rain, highs remain fairly warm. I'm WVUA Chief Meteorologist Richard Scott, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, The Capstone.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and tonight we're talking about basically relationships, but I asked the question, is hooking up replacing romantic relationships on college campuses? And we have Dr. John Burry from St. Thomas University in St. Paul, Minnesota, who basically specializes, has done this for most of your career, right, Dr. Burry?
Correct.
All of your career, I would say. The question I want to ask you is, do you feel like, or do you have research or statistics to back this up? Are modern students more sexually active than students from previous generations? Is there any way to know that, really?
More socially active?
More
sexually active.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the big difference seems to be the number of sexual partners. So that if we look at the mid-80s, it would have been in the neighborhood of about 80% of young people, young adults, were sexually active.
Uh-huh.
But at this point in time, it just looks like there are more young adults who are actually having sex with more partners, whereas in the mid-80s, you'd have more situations of committed sex.
Yeah, but less number of partners.
Right.
You wrote a book. I'm looking at your bio right now, but I'm interested in knowing more about your book called Intentional Dating, When You're Ready to Leave Behind the Liars, Losers, and Lemons, 15 Keys to Finding Love for a Lifetime. Tell us about that, because I talk to a lot of students who, I don't want to say they don't know how to date, because that sounds stupid, but they have trouble with it. They have trouble either asking somebody out, or like we were talking about last week, with the rejection of it. So they don't try anymore, or when they do start dating, they pick the wrong people.
It's very easy to pick the wrong people. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that we're enticed by eye candy. And a lot of times, physical attractiveness is not a real good predictor of somebody that's going to make a good, long-term, loving, caring partner.
True.
So choosing based only on eye candy is probably not a good idea. But obviously, physical attractiveness is not irrelevant either.
Right. And when you say that to a college student, a lot of times, you know, an 18, 19-year-old, they just look at you like you're ancient. You know?
Oh, yes, I'm well aware of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do teach this course on the psychology of marriage and family, and we talk a lot about, well, there's a whole section on the stages of dating, which is basically how do you develop greater liking and then greater loving for
uh-huh.
someone. And
uh-huh.
we go through particular stages. And I am amazed at how open these students are in this class. I hear a lot about their successes and their heartaches. And I deeply appreciate how incredibly open and how they really do. The young people I come in contact with, they really do want to know how to do this well.
That's right. They want some answers.
Yes.
They need some advice because, you know, I have several students, I'll be honest with you, whose parents have really not been good role models. I mean, there's a lot of parents that are, don't get me wrong. But there's some students who don't really, they really have had bad examples for love, relationships, or et cetera.
And that's becoming more and more the case.
I think so. I think it is, unfortunately.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about, you know, are you familiar with the social media, Tinder or Grindr or something like that, where people find hookups or they find, you know, dates?
Oh,
you know about
definitely.
Those.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
How
yep.
effective is initial attraction in predicting long-term stable and happy relationships? I mean, I think you just answered that with the physical attractiveness, you know, it's not a good predictor.
It's not a good predictor, and in fact, there is some research suggesting at least for physically attractive women that they end up being less effective as wives and mothers. And the explanation that appears in this research is that for physically attractive women, they basically very often had things come to them without a great deal of effort. And therefore, when it comes to the place of marriage and being a mother, they're accustomed to maybe not putting in as much effort as is required.
Mm-hmm.
So So that is one little, so it's not a good predictor.
No, not at all. In your research article titled Cheating, Hooking Up, and Attention to Romantic Alternatives Among College Students, you write the following. I'm going to read an excerpt for that from that, okay? And then I want to get your comment. Since the 1960s, there's been a gradual shift away from dating as the primary courtship model among college students. In its place has emerged a series of uncommitted sexual encounters among individuals who are not romantically involved with each other or hooking up. Even for those students who state that they are in a committed romantic relationship, the frequency of cheating can be quite common, with reported rates as high as 68% of women and 75% of men. Furthermore, dating students often report high attentiveness to romantic alternatives other than their partner. Can you talk a little bit about cheating?
Well, a recent article asked people who were currently in a significant dating relationship, have you cheated on this person in the last 3 months? And over 40% said yes, in the last 3 months they had. So it's fairly common. So I don't know what else to say except that it's fairly common. And it's not, it has become, it used to be that men were the cheaters.
Yeah.
Women were the cheaties.
Yeah.
I was recently having a discussion in our student center with five guys, and I can handle, you know, superficial conversation only so long, and eventually I got around to asking them, well, how many of you have been cheated on in a serious relationship?
Mm-hmm.
Five for five.
Wow.
Yep.
How is that connected? Is there a correlation between people who have, and I don't know if this is the right way to ask it, had casual sex that has turned into a committed relationship? Are those people more apt to cheat? I don't know if you can answer that even.
We don't have the data for dating couples,
mm-hmm.
but we do have the data for married couples, that the greater the number of sexual partners that some that a woman has had, then the more apt she is to be unhappily married, the more apt she is to consider divorce, and the probability of cheating goes up.
Interesting. On that note, what's the most, do you know the most recent statistic on marriage rate success?
It's hovering around 45 to 50% divorce rate. But the interesting thing is that among those couples that remain intact, only about 35%, maybe 40% are happy in their marriage. That so when you look at marital success, part of it is stability, but another part of it is satisfaction.
Definitely.
So when you look at that, it's a little scary.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like it's has it decreased in the last few years?
Well, I would say compared to the mid 80s to today, the marital satisfaction rates have gone down, but the divorce rates haven't changed all that much.
In the 30 years that you've been on a college campus, have romantic relationship values, behaviors, dynamics changed between students, you know, over the decades? I mean, I know you've seen that. And how have you, as a professor, adapted to that, to those changes?
I
not to put you on the spot.
No,
but I just
deeply appreciate. I act quite honestly. I love my students. They are so good-hearted for the most part. They're very good-hearted. They really want to do right with their lives, but they just have been misled in a lot of ways.
Yes,
and so. That it's been very easy for me to adapt, simply because I care so much about these young men and women. I think in terms of the behaviors, the biggest thing I've seen, I think, is that the kind of self-interest on the part of young adults has gone up. And with that, I mean, we can call it selfishness, self-sufficiency, but there's just a greater level of self-interest. And with that, that changes the way in which people end up doing love.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I've been working at the Counseling Center for about 10 years, going on 11 years, and when I first started working there, I was really shocked at how many people just didn't date, didn't go on a one-on-one date. It was mostly group dating. And about 2 or 3 years ago, it seemed like that was changing and people were starting to go on individual dates a little more. But now I feel like it's swinging back to more of the group dating. Are you seeing that on your campus too?
I think I would have to agree with you. Although one of the things that I've found with students that come out of this marriage and family course is that they get enticed by the idea of actually having a sincere, loving, giving, caring relationship.
Yes.
And therefore, they literally ask, well, how would I do that? How do I go on a date? What should I do in order to start with somebody?
Mm-hmm. I think they worry a lot about conversation. I mean, I spend a lot of sessions with just practicing social skills sometimes with people, you know?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, definitely.
Hey, you know, we mentioned social media, but other than social media and, say, some dating apps, what would advice would you give college students seeking that crucial first date?
There was a New York Times piece back in January. Title of it is To Fall in Love with Anyone, Do This.
Oh, I've got that right here. I read it earlier today.
Yep, it's absolutely delightful. So Arthur Aaron did this more than 20 years ago, and the most important thing is ask somebody, and then when you do, sit and talk. Actually get to know. Put the cell phones down. No media, no electronics, and just literally talk with each other.
I think that is so scary for a lot of people. You know, it's just terrifying. Because I think a lot of people, myself included, fear silence. And as I say that, we go to silence.
Yes.
So you know,
one of our best predictors for increased liking is proximity. Simply being around someone.
True.
And the more you're around them, the more comfortable you are, and the more comfortable you become, the more you open up.
That's true. That's why a lot of times the friendship turns into more, right?
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And friendship is pretty much our best predictor of long-term successful love relationships.
Yeah. Okay, last question. Many of us, you know, give advice to young adults about, you know, I've had people tell me never go to bed mad. That's not happening with me. I'll just tell you a lot of times. I have a really bad temper. Communication is key.
I was just working on a talk today on anger in the family.
Oh, gosh.
So I'm going to give that in Denver next week.
There you go.
Yep.
What one piece of advice that we haven't covered here today would you offer our listening audience?
Well, the subtitle of Intentional Dating is 15 Keys to Finding Love for a Lifetime.
That's right.
And oftentimes students will get into the discussion with me about which one do I think is the most important. And quite honestly, love for a lifetime, I think the one that I come down on is find somebody who actually wants to become a better human being.
Okay.
Because in the long run, marriage stretches us like nothing else. And then when you have children, you're stretched even further.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process, all sorts of things that you weren't even aware of, you know,
come up.
Bad habits, some difficult issues, and somebody that literally wants to become a better person, they're going to make it through that change process.
Yes. Good advice. Thank you so much for being on the show and taking time out of your busy day. I really appreciate this. This was our first venture in actually having a live interview on the telephone, and I think it's worked beautifully, so it's going to open us up to a lot more opportunities to have guests across the nation and maybe even across the world. So thank you for being on the show.
Glad to be a part of it. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Wish you the best, BJ.
Take care. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye. We're coming back. Stay tuned. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7. We're coming back with Dr. Casey Totenhagen. I hope I pronounced that correctly, who's an assistant professor in human development and family studies, and we're going to continue our talk on relationships.
Find on my favorite station in the world, 90.7, The Capstone.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone, and tonight we are talking about relationships. We just got through talking about is hooking up replacing romantic relationships on college campuses. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and I host the show. I want to give our email address in case you have questions. It's brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. If you have some questions, send those in. We'll check those. And Dr. Totenhagen is our next guest, so you might have some questions for her, and we'll just kind of play it by ear. But thank you for being on the show. This is Dr. Casey Totenhagen. She's an assistant professor in human development and family studies here on campus. And she's live in the studio with me. She's not on the phone. I was just telling her before the break, we found, Natalie Beck and I did some research on the topic, and we came across her article, and your article, Casey, can I call you Casey?
Yes.
Good days, bad days, when should you make sacrifices in a relationship? I want to get to that in just a minute, but first of all, give us a little bit about your background.
Well, I grew up in North Dakota, and I had originally been majoring in elementary education. I minored in child development and family science, and I just thought, wow, this stuff is so interesting. I really need to learn a lot more about family functioning.
Yes.
And so that's how it all started. And in graduate school, I probably started to go through a little bit of what one of my colleagues would call me search. And I was married, and in graduate school, I had a lot of things going on, and I thought, wow, this is stressful. It's hard to maintain a relationship when you have so many daily things going on and so much on your plate. And that's really how I got interested in understanding how daily events really kind of seep into our lives and influence our relationships.
What is what you mentioned before we came on that you teach classes here at UA? Tell us about your classes that you teach.
Sure, I teach a few classes. The one probably most relevant for today's show is interpersonal relationships.
Okay.
HD 462.
And is that, what kinds of things do you talk about?
Well, we kind of cover a real breadth of topics in that class. A lot on romantic relationships, but we cover other types of interpersonal relationships as well, friendships, family relationships, and the like. But a lot focused on understanding through our communication and through our relationships with our partners, how that really comes to influence our own well-being and how we can
function well in relationships and feel good in relationships as well.
Do you feel like the students that take this class, are they open, like Dr. Burry talked about in his class? Are they pretty, you know, do they volunteer information? Do you have lively conversations?
Yes,
besides just a lecture class?
Yes,
know?
It has to be one of my favorite classes to teach because the students are always so excited and so interested in all the topics. They're just, you know, champing at the bit to self-disclose.
Yes, that's and it really, exactly right.
Yeah, and it makes it so much fun. And it's amazing to see the connection the students can make with the material because everybody has had some sort of relationship. Even students who may not have had romantic relationships
yes.
yet still understand what it's like to see their friends in relationships, to be in friendships, and it's just so relevant for everybody.
Or to have a crush on somebody.
Exactly.
I mean, I tell everybody, my concentration in counseling is marriage and family, and it is my favorite. I don't know why that is. It's just like, used to, the reason I got into this is I thought I had so much good advice until I actually got married, and then everything changes then. You're like, what am I talking about? I don't know if I know what I'm talking about. But it's just, you know, it's like you said, it's kind of a common denominator that all of us have, mm-hmm. is to seek out a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
Or something has gone wrong, or people need advice on what they're doing wrong, or they're in a bad relationship. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just so many directions you can go. I don't know what kinds of topics you have for your class,
mm-hmm.
but I can imagine. I mean, do you have topics like dating?
Yeah.
Hooking up?
Yeah. I mean, we talk about several different theoretical perspectives. Hooking up is one of the topics that comes up in class, and of course, students are always interested in that,
yes.
especially in the context
of. Make sure yours perk up.
I know, right?
Yeah.
It's so exciting.
I know.
Understanding what the sexual experience is like for different types of relationships and different types of couples and in different situations, because sexual contact doesn't always only occur in the context of close relationships,
That's
as
right.
Dr. Burry was just discussing.
That's right. Hey, I mentioned this article that when I first read about you, you were at another UA.
When you
wrote the article, you were at the University of Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about this article. I read it for the because I always like to research mm-hmm. before I come. And the one thing that stood out to me, and you may not remember making this quote, so I'm going to conveniently read it to you. Individuals on the receiving end of a partner's sacrifice did not report feeling more committed to their partner, perhaps because they were unaware that their partner had done anything special for them.
Mm-hmm.
That lack of awareness is a phenomenon explored in other research and is something you called that you hope more people study in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So this article was written when? 2013.
Oh, yeah, a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's from a manuscript that was published a couple of years
mm-hmm.
ago. And that, actually, that quote, that specific finding is kind of one of my favorite findings in that
How
study.
How did I know? No.
And
well, the thing that stood out to me is like the word sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And you clarified in the article
yes.
that sacrifice, that doesn't mean like cutting off your arm
right.
for your partner. It's talking about little things, just little mm-hmm. things that somebody else can notice that
mm-hmm.
you've done.
Yeah, people hear the word sacrifice, and I think it's such a value-laden term. They hear sacrifice, and they think, oh, this is a big deal, like moving across the country for someone. Or, you know, it often even has like a negative connotation
yes.
to it. But that's not really how we conceptualize it, at least for this research. It's more these opportunities that we have to demonstrate love and caring for our partners. And they're often in the context of just our day-to-day lives, these minor things that we can do. Like, maybe I didn't want to do all of the chores tonight, but maybe I knew my partner had a hard day and I wanted to give my partner a break. So I sacrificed my own interests in order to give my partner a break. And I went ahead and I did those chores.
You know, and I'm going to try to tie this into our campus here
mm-hmm.
and the students that you see and you work with. And I know you're not a clinical therapist.
Right.
Like I am. So I see more students who, but you know, talking to your students in your class, you can give your opinion, of course,
mm-hmm.
in the research you've done. You know, I see more students that really, Dr. Burry mentioned self-centeredness.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say that, but a lot of people really do not know how to be in a relationship because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is just age. I mean, it's just immaturity, and you have to just
mm-hmm.
practice it, right?
Yeah.
What's your opinion on that? Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I think there might be some of that going on. And I think broader, we're really seeing a cultural shift. you know, over the last maybe even century or so, where people aren't ending relationships and people aren't ending those relationships because, you know, they're not interested in love or they're failing at love. It's really that they value love so much that they really want to find the perfect person, the perfect fit. And it feels like if they have to work towards something, then that's maybe just not a good match.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to turn down a relationship or to end a relationship when you have your first fight or when something doesn't seem like that textbook romance.
Yes, yes. It defeats the fantasy
mm-hmm.
of what you
exactly.
have is what a wonderful
exactly.
relationship
It's on such
is.
A high pedestal, and it's something that they ascribe to and that they want, but that they feel like just kind of might magically happen. And if it requires work, it's not true love, which isn't
exactly.
the case.
That's not the case. And I say that to people all the time, like, look, you've got to work at this,
mm-hmm.
and this is what it takes.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you feel uncomfortable, and sometimes you feel sad.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's not easy. That's the work part
mm-hmm.
of it.
And sometimes you need to make those sacrifices for your partner. You don't always get to... just look out for your own outcomes.
Yeah.
There's two people to consider.
You know, this is, okay, I'm going to get on my soapbox for a minute. This is an editorial comment. So whoever's listening, just turn the radio off if you don't want to hear this. But, you know, the one thing that puzzles me, and I think I've spoken about this before when we've talked about relationships, is I cannot get over the fact when somebody breaks, nowadays, when somebody breaks up with somebody, they still remain friends. Back 100 years ago when I was dating, we didn't do that. That was it. It was the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often thought that maybe one of the reasons that people still want to remain friends, I mean, it's easy for the breaker-upper
mm-hmm.
to tell the person that they've dumped, let's still be friends, you know, because then you don't feel guilty.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Part of it.
The guilt is,
mm-hmm.
is part of it. Maybe not so much a genuine interest in continuing the relationship in some fashion,
no.
but rather it's a way to end the relationship without feeling the same sense of guilt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that
but
it's
for the person who's been dumped, it's just like it gives you false hope, I think.
Yeah, it can be difficult to move on if you feel like there's kind of that door left open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's true. Tell us a little bit, you know, I talked with Dr. Burry some about why we feel the need to study relationships,
mm-hmm.
right? So why is the concept of relationship satisfaction
mm-hmm.
important to study or examine?
Well, I think satisfaction...
Like, who cares, right?
Well...
you know?
Yeah, it's true. But I think the concept of satisfaction, and there's any number of concepts that we can and do study when
mm-hmm.
it comes to relationships. Satisfaction seems to come up over and over again, I think, because it serves as a pretty good thermometer to the functioning of a relationship. And people want to feel good in relationships. And it doesn't mean that every single day is magical, but it means that overall you feel a sense of satisfaction and a sense of happiness in the context of that relationship.
Right.
So it serves as just kind of an overall thermometer of how the relationship is functioning and how people are feeling in the relationship. But it's not the only concept that's important. We're interested in things like closeness and things like commitment and things like that as well.
And security.
I
hear a lot of people
mm-hmm.
talking about security. We're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, I want to talk to Dr. Totenhagen about your current research.
Okay.
And also want to get your opinion and advice, just like I asked Dr. Burry, about what to tell somebody for that first crucial date.
Sounds
we'll be
good.
Right back. You're listening to Brain Matters. I'm BJ Gunther. This is 90.7 The Capstone.
I'm off for the hinterlands. We have no to touch you stay.
The 90.7, the Capstone.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, we're back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone, and I'm BJ Gunther. We're talking about relationships, basically, and we have Dr. Casey Totenhagen, who is a professor in Human Development and Family Studies. And the next thing I want to ask you, Casey, is you've had several research interest areas.
Mm-hmm.
One of those being predictors and moderators of relationship quality.
Yeah.
So can you share with us a brief overview of these predictors?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I'm always interested in understanding what makes good relationships good, what makes bad relationships bad. Because like Dr. Burry mentioned, I think relationships are an opportunity for people to feel that desired closeness that humans really thrive on. But relationships can also be some of our most painful experiences as well. So I'm interested in understanding how to promote well-being in relationships and promote those more positive feelings.
Right.
And some of what I've been most interested in is understanding how stress impacts relationships. Because one might have had a stressful day, and even though that stress had nothing to do with their partner, it might have been stress at work or stress
school.
In traffic mm-hmm. or stress in school. It could have been anything like that. It had nothing to do with a partner. We find that that stress still impacts both individuals' relationship
yes.
quality. So if I've had a really stressful day at school, I'm going to report feeling less satisfied in my relationship. My partner reports that too. It impacts not just me, but my partner as well.
Interesting. Because mm-hmm. it's kind of secondary.
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. we see some of that transmission process where my bad day kind of transmits over to my partner and impacts my partner as well.
What about, have you done any research, and this may be going way on another tangent,
mm-hmm.
on how, because we're on a college campus, this is
yeah.
what is interesting to me, how alcohol affects relationships, alcohol and drugs, I guess, because I will hear a lot of students come in and they will talk about an argument they had mm-hmm. with their boyfriend, girlfriend, or whoever, and the next question that comes out of my mouth is usually like, were y'all drinking? You know, I hate to ask you that, but was there drinking involved? And inevitably, yes, there was. But people disregard that as a mm-hmm. factor to causing problems in a relationship.
That's such a good point. And it's not something that I have directly examined in my own research. But it is important. It's important in all kinds of relationships
yeah.
and any kind of substance, really, that's going to impact a person's social perceptions and ability to communicate
mm-hmm.
In a kind and respectful way.
Right. And defensiveness.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
Speaking of your research, tell us about mm-hmm. any, are you doing any current research?
Yeah. Well, we talked about before the break how we don't find, when I do more sacrifices for my partner, on those days, I tend to report feeling more committed to my partner. Mm-hmm. My partner reports no benefit from my sacrifices.
That totally shocked me.
I know, right? It seems like they should get all of the benefit because I'm doing the work. They're not really incurring any costs. They're getting all the benefit. And so I have to wonder if part of it isn't from awareness. Like,
mm-hmm.
I might sacrifice till the cows come home, but if my partner isn't aware that I have done any sacrifices, well, then of course he or she is not going to benefit from those sacrifices.
So how do you make them more aware then?
Well,
so that you get credit.
I know, right? You don't want to be greedy, but I think that feeling of gratitude is important, you know, and you've done something
yes.
special for a partner. You want to feel like they appreciated it, that they were aware that you did it and that they appreciated it. So I'm trying to get at some of that in my current research.
Right.
So we're asking people about sacrifices that they might have done. Also asking whether they thought their partner was aware of those sacrifices and how grateful their partners were for those sacrifices.
I'm thinking of my own life here. You know, my husband may or may not be listening. He usually listens to the show. So I'm lucky because I have somebody who cleans the bathtub for me. Okay, that's rare, right,
mm-hmm.
for a husband to do that. And so over the years, I'm not saying he doesn't clean it perfectly, because he does, but sometimes I have found places that were not up to my standards, I will say that, and I've had to bite my tongue and still compliment him, because I want him to keep, you know, I want that to be a reinforcer, right? Am I doing the wrong thing? Is that the right thing to do?
Or? No, I mean,
it's working.
Yeah,
right?
I think that if he's doing those kinds of things for you and you appreciate it, even if it's not perfect, you appreciate it.
Would you call that a sacrifice on his part?
Does he enjoy cleaning the tub?
I don't know. I'll ask him when I get home. Probably
I think
not.
That's probably key. If he likes cleaning the tub, well, no, it's not really a sacrifice.
So a sacrifice is something, obviously, that is difficult for you and that's hard for you.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't always have to be
not
super
fun.
Difficult, but it's maybe something you didn't want to do, but you did it anyway. Or something you would have liked to have done, but you didn't. Like, maybe you wanted to go out and party with your friends on Friday evening, but your partner wanted you to stay home and watch a movie on the couch, so you chose to do that.
Cinderella. A chick flick, you know, that's a sacrifice. Okay, so here's the big question. What do you, I don't know if you can give students advice, but I'm sure they ask you, right?
Don't they
ask you?
They do.
So I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Dr. Burry. Okay. What is your advice for that crucial first date or asking somebody out or maintaining that? You know, you go on a first date. How do you get to the second date?
I think Dr. Burry had such good advice. I think those conversations are so important, and they're not always comfortable to have when you're just figuring out what someone's all about and who they are. And you kind of start at that broader surface level, like peeling back the onion. We talk about peeling back the onion in HD 462, where when you first start having some conversations, you're not really going into a lot of depth, but maybe you are having some conversations to just get to know a little bit more about the person and assess like common areas of interest. So you kind of go across a few topics, figure out where you might have some more commonalities or common interests. And from there, you might start to peel back the onion skin a little bit and gain a little bit more depth in those certain topics.
Yeah, and he also mentioned, you know, and I talk to students about this all the time, especially students who have been in a relationship and they've been hurt, you know, and they're very scared to get in another relationship because they think they can prevent being hurt again. And you can't. There's just no way to guarantee that. You know, the thing is, if you don't take that risk and, you know, try to be in another relationship, you know, what's the alternative? The alternative is to be alone and to, you know, not have a companion. I mean, we could go through the negatives, but I've had several students that is their fear, and we have to really have a conversation about taking that risk again.
I think that's such a good point. And of course, you know, that's not to downplay the hurt that they might be experiencing by any means. And we base our expectations about what's going to happen in any relationship in part based on what we've experienced before. So
that's
if we've had poor experiences, we might start to expect
that.
And fear that in future relationships. But you're right. I mean, the alternative of, you know, maintaining your distance and not ever developing closeness kind of violates our basic human needs.
True.
To have that closeness.
And it hurts to see other people in relationships around you. And that is so hard on a college campus because there are so many people that are in relationships. And so it's difficult. Hey, thanks for being on the show.
It was lovely. Thank you.
I appreciate it. I never get to all the questions that I have for people, but I usually go off on a tangent, and it's hopefully sometimes more interesting than some of the questions I've come up with. Let me make a few. And first of all, if you want to take Dr. Totenhagen's class, registration is coming up in the next couple of weeks. I bet it's hard to get into your class.
We have a few sections available. They do fill up.
Are you teaching in the summer?
I'm not teaching this summer. No,
so
focusing
the fall,
on that research.
Okay.
In the fall, I will be teaching the class.
I hear you. Let me make a few announcements before we take off tonight. I want to say that, and I say this every week, don't forget that our shows are recorded and podcasted on the Counseling Center's website. You can go to counseling.ua.edu if you want to listen to past shows. Just click on the Brain Matters icon. It'll take you to some of those shows. I want to announce that the University of Alabama's 24-hour hazing and harassment hotline at 248-348-HALT, that's 248-348-4258, allows students, parents, or others to report incidents of discrimination, harassment, hazing, or any kind of unhealthy behavior. An individual calling the hotline can leave a confidential message with the Office of the Dean of Students. Callers to the hotline are anonymous, so callers are asked to include as much detailed information as possible. For more information, contact the Office of the Dean of Students at 348-3326 or visit them at http://hazing.ua.edu. As always, I want to thank a few people who've made the show possible. Dr. Lee Keyes, he's our Executive Director at the Counseling Center. Terry Siggers, Office of Student Media. Also, I want to mention Seth Juniak, who helped us tonight with Dr. Burry's phone call. Appreciate Seth. And Natalie Beck, Dorothy Beck, and Al Johnson. They're the production assistants for my show. Natalie's a colleague of mine at the Counseling Center. Of course, all the WVUA staff. Andrew Brown helped us out, and so did, I think, that's the only other person that's actually helped us tonight. I don't want to miss anybody. But especially I want to thank my guests tonight, Drs. John Burry and Dr. Casey Totenhagen. Thank you so much. We'll return next Tuesday with a show called Is Eating Healthy on Campus Financially Feasible? I don't know if it is or not. It seems to be difficult because eating healthily is expensive. Thanks so much for listening tonight. Again, I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and this has been Brain Matters on WVUA FM 90.7, The Capstone.
The views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the